Radio 560 KPQ.
This is The Agenda from News Radio 560 KPQ and KPQ.com, where topics of local concern affecting you are open for discussion. And now your host, Michael Knight.
I'm coming. I was just talking to the band on the phone, right? And let me play some music so we can just say, consider this. Coming to the PAX stage from Ireland, three women in the musical group Affinity, made up of Emer Barry on soprano, Teresa O'Donnell on the harp, Mary McCaig, I think that's her last name, on violin. Three classically trained and masters of their instruments and their voices. And it's this unique combination of classical, Celtic, pop, and, of course, Washington that gave them their affinity, and that's how they got their name. They're going to be in town when? Tonight. So you've got to act quickly. You've got to get your dollars together, get down to the pack, get yourself tickets for this evening. The Boston Globe described them as soulful, sass, and sophistication, as well as an exquisite technique. And you know how particular they are in Boston about technique, so that's probably the best review they could have hoped for. What are the chances of them coming to our city? Well, as I say, quite good, actually. They're on their way. In fact, they're on the line with me right now. Are you with me, ladies?
We're with you.
Hello.
Hello, hello, hello. You're on your way. Where are you right now? Just somewhere outside of George, Washington?
Yeah, we're pulled in at a truck stop at the moment. So we're on the road. It's snow all around us, but we can't wait to get to Wenatchee. We're so excited. It'll be our first time performing in Wenatchee.
But you performed in the Northwest before. This has become a good place for you, a good place for you to continue your touring, correct?
Yes, that's right. But we added Wenatchee this year. We performed in the Bing Crosby Theatre in Spokane on Sunday night, and we're in Coeur d'Alene tomorrow night. So Wenatchee is our newest venture.
Well, I hope you like the PAC Theatre. It's a nice one.
Good. We've heard that. We've heard great things about it, actually. So we can't wait to see it later.
The joys of being on the road in the snow, right? You've got 3 days ahead of you. You're going to see more snow. Well, actually, you might see less snow, Emer. In fact, the chances are it's going to be improving a little bit. We'll find out if the weather forecast comes true.
Well, you know, we don't get an awful lot of snow in Ireland typically, so it's kind of, we're sort of like children at the moment. We're like, oh my God, it's snow. But I don't think it's necessarily like that
for our driver, Mr. Howard Crosby.
Yeah, we're sort of like looking around in awe at the snow. But it's a different thing driving in it, I think.
That's all right, Michael. I grew up in Spokane, so I've had a lifetime of practice in snow, but I had enough of it and moved to California earlier this year. So,
all right, good job.
I just came back up here to get a little flavor for what I've escaped.
Well, tell me something about how you began your career, Emer. I mean, you must have been a somebody with a gifted voice as a young woman, and then you just began studying, I assume, because from what I've seen of your voice, you're extraordinarily powerful soprano.
Oh, thank you. Well, my parents tell me that I was singing before I was talking, so I would stand up in the cot and sing, and then I'd stop and start again just a few keys higher, and I would continue doing that. So I loved it, and they sent me to singing lessons from the age of 7, and then I trained in Dublin and in London in opera mostly, and then I met the girls and we started doing a little bit more classical crossover and Celtic. So it's a fusion of a few different styles.
Weren't you lucky, though? Your parents sent you to take lessons. Many would say, a singer? You can't be a singer. That's not a job.
Well, my dad was a huge fan of the great opera singers like Gally Kirchy. He loved it. And I think it was just a case of see how she gets on. And, being happy was the most important thing in our house. And we're so lucky that we get to do this, that we get to come on tour and actually, you know, make a living out of what we love. Yeah. And we all absolutely love it.
It's interesting, so, as your father would play opera. Did he play it loudly?
Do you know what? He did play it loudly. I didn't like the sound of it when I was a kid at all. I'm doing that. That sounds awful. So what we do is not necessarily opera anymore. And the show is very much, it's called A Celtic Christmas, obviously, so it's a fusion of sort of all our different styles, but it's mostly Irish music. We have a little nod to songs of the Hollywood era, because we do have Bing Crosby's nephew with us, and he'll be telling some stories about Bing, and they were golfing buddies. And we have some really great fun pieces in the show. Mary does a really a really funny piece where she's great at... I'll let her tell you about
it.
Don't give it away. But there's lots of jigs and reels, which are great fun. And they pass along and sort of... There's a little bit of... Because it's a more sort of small, intimate show, it's the audience get to participate more than you would necessarily at a big production kind of a show. So there's lots of chats. And we've been told... We never get tired of being told that our accent is cute. So we'll be talking to the audience a lot, and getting them involved, and I go down into the audience at one point as well. So it's very different, and we make the most out of the fact that there's just three of us on stage, and then Howard is four, and his accompanist is five. So the most you'll ever see on stage is five people, but we pack a big punch for a small group.
And Howard is Bing Crosby's nephew that you mentioned?
Yes, that's right. He's here. Yeah.
That's right. Yeah, my dad was Bing's older brother by about 18 months. They were sort of Irish twins, and of course, Bing's mother was Irish, Katie Harrigan from West Cork. So he was certainly one of the more well-known Irish Americans, to say the least. And I always get a wonderful reception whenever I go to Ireland, which is as often as possible, especially since I have all these wonderful friends over there, and they have a lot of golf there as well, as you might know, Michael. So what's not to love about Ireland?
Right? Exactly. That's exactly it. Emer, if you can hear me, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Okay, great. What I was going to ask you is, can you tell us what Christmas was like in your house and your family when you were growing up? And where were you? Were you near Dublin or some other town?
So I'm from the country, a little place called Longford. So, yeah, growing up, we were talking about it in the car, all our different experiences of Christmas. Mary has a funny story. Her aunt gave her hat boxes for Christmas once. Empty hat boxes for Christmas once. Howard's dad used to get an orange for Christmas. So we were actually only talking about this before. And for me, Christmas, I was the youngest of my family. So, I got two older brothers and I had older cousins. So that's great fun when you're the youngest. Everybody wants to spoil you. So there's lots of gifts, and I used to sing at Mass as well. So I sing at Mass every Christmas in Longford Cathedral. I've been singing there since I was about 10, and I'll be going back again this year. I come home every Christmas because my mum still lives down in Longford, and I'll be singing O Holy Night again.
Wow! So you're gonna play a few shows and then fly home quickly in time for Christmas.
Absolutely. It's a family, it's a tradition there at this point in Longford. But O Holy Night will be in the show as well. It'll finish our first half.
Well, it's interesting that you mentioned that one, you and Emer, because I saw that video today.
And
the incredible thing about it, what I noticed was the ease in which you sang what is a very difficult song, and you just sang it as if you had all the power in the world. You never seemed to be straining at all.
No, it's, but you know what, that takes an awful lot of training, and that's why we all work together so well, because we all have the same background in classical training, because I think you need that in order to be able to sustain this kind of tour. The arrangement as well, that was written by Mary. So there's that sort of Celtic fusion in it, Mary. Actually, we do a slightly different version. We fused O Holy Night with Hallelujah by Leonard Cohen, so you won't hear that anywhere else except
at an Affinity show,
because we didn't release that version for iTunes or YouTube.
Isn't it amazing how that song by Leonard Cohen has got this extraordinary life? I mean, if you examine just the lyrics, it's this tale of love affair that's no longer happening. And if you examine the music, it just takes you away. It transports you to places.
It's very spiritual. There's something incredibly spiritual about it. It was Mary's idea, actually, to fuse O Hallelujah with O Holy Night, and it works so, so well. It kind of gives just this different element to it. So we get great feedback after the show on that version. So if you want to hear that version, you won't hear it anywhere else except tonight he's on at the New America Pack in Wenatchee. So, yeah, we're, as I said, we're super excited to come here, and we've got an amazing reaction so far. I think we've something like almost 500 tickets sold, yeah. So...
Not many left.
Well, I've been telling everyone to go down to the PAC box office right now or buy online and get yourselves a ticket to the Affinity Show tonight. Tonight, I repeat, at the PAC right down the street from us, about two blocks from here. So we wish you good luck when I finally let you get off the phone and come into town. What about you, Mary? Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you loud and clear.
I'm curious about how you picked up the violin and when you decided that was your instrument. Did you play anything else before you committed to the violin?
Well, I think I was a little young at four to to make that decision. My dad played traditional Irish fiddle, and my mom was a music teacher, and she played the piano. So I was also brought up on piano and violin, so as was my sister, and I kept it going professionally. And my sister went for a sensible, steady job and became a chemical engineer.
Well, did your father give you hints? He say, no, don't play it like that, play it like this?
No, not at all. I had a private tutor for lessons. So my parents were very supportive, but they didn't interfere with the private tuition. So,
well, did anyone ever say, look, you could play in a symphony orchestra, or I have this idea about going on the road with two other ladies and traveling all around the world. Does that appeal to you? And you said, what?
So much more fun being on the road with Emer and Teresa and Howard. We have great fun.
We do. We have really, really good
yeah.
fun.
And we love meeting the fans after the concerts as well. We do a meet and greet at the end, and we sign our CDs and posters. And it's just lovely to meet everybody and hear their stories about their connections with Ireland and their heritage, or even just the visits that they may have had and the questions that they might have for us about being Irish. And
I suppose I don't have to tell you, you don't have to go very far around the United States. Whichever state you choose, you're going to find Irishmen just about everywhere, probably at your show, but at the stage door waiting for you to come out.
This is it, and it's really lovely. It really makes it very special for us. And I think it's special for them, too, because they may not have come to Ireland for a long time, so we can kind of bring a bit of our Irishness and the whole Celtic tradition to them. So I think everybody enjoys it.
You've learned over the years how to read your audience. Do you think that the American audience reacts differently to some of the music that the European or Irish audience would react to differently?
I think it really strikes a chord with them, and we see people with the tissues out.
Of course.
And so they're laughing and they're crying in equal measures, crying with the emotion just of the songs, I suppose. And, you know, people come up and they tell us that, you know, different songs resonated with them in particular ways. And it makes it very special for us to feel that we can have that effect on people. So.
And isn't it part of the heritage too, for Irish poets, for Irish singers, for Irish creators? They're always going for the tearjerker. I mean, if you're not crying in an Irish product like that, somebody's done something wrong.
Yeah, this is it. Either laughing or crying.
In fact, both would be preferable, wouldn't it?
Yeah, this is it.
We do both, though. There's a great variety. Sorry, this is Emer again.
Hi, Emer.
If you come on tour, you notice I chip in a lot. If you come to the concert, we're all talking over each other. The show is full of that. We've noticed that Ireland is so famous for two styles of music. There's either the haunting tearjerker or the one the song that makes you laugh and want to clap along. So there's huge variety in that, and you are going back and forth all the time between the tearjerker and the rousing kind of jig and reel or funny song. So we have so much fun. I don't know if anybody enjoys it quite as much as we do.
I'm sure your audience must. Teresa, are you there?
I am, yes.
Hi, Teresa O'Donnell. You play the harp, right?
That's right, I do, yeah.
Now, you're the person in every rock and roll band. The guitarist carries his own guitar, the drummer carries his own stuff, but the guy who plays the organ has the whole band has to help him get his instrument into the club. Do the other two girls have to help you carry your harp before you get it into the stage?
No, not at all. I'm a very independent woman. I lift it myself. I'm used to it now after so many years.
Well, how heavy is it, I wonder? Heavier than a double bass?
Oh, yeah, it's a lot heavier, yeah. You just get used to it.
I don't doubt that you're an independent, strong woman, Teresa.
It's very good exercise as well. So it saves membership money, fee or whatever on a gym. So.
I'm speaking with the members of the group from just got in from Ireland. They're called Affinity. They're going to be playing tonight at the PAC Theater. They're on stage this very evening. What a way to celebrate Christmas with their great music as they come to town. It's going to be a Celtic Christmas. We'll come back to continue our conversation with these ladies right after these words.
837 for your free consultation and to see if you qualify. That's 800-461-8937.
The Agenda with Michael Knight on News Radio 560 KPQ and KPQ.com.
34 degrees in Wenatchee Town. We have our time is 12:34. My very special guests are the members of the Irish group on their way to Wenatchee for tonight's show at the PAC. They're called Affinity, made up from Emer Barry, Mary McCaig, and Teresa McDonald. They play harp, violin, and Emer's the soprano, and they have a huge sound, classically trained. Where did you meet Emer and get together with this idea of why don't we go on the road and do something that mixes Celtic music with a classical training that we've got?
Well, initially Affinity got together about 10 years ago, and started kind of myself and Mary met at a competition, and she was playing the piano. She's also a concert pianist. She's fantastic at both instruments. I can only sing. I feel very intimidated. So we met, and then she decided, you know, I play violin as well. We should get a harp involved. And then we started playing around with different things. And fast forward about sort of 5 years, we were doing something in the National Concert Hall in Ireland. And we were sort of a guest at this fundraiser for St. Vincent de Paul. And another person on the program was Howard Crosby. And we heard about this, and we sort of made this joke. We'd be like, wouldn't it be cool if we got to meet Howard Crosby and if we got to go to America with him? We were joking about this. And after our performance, Howard was standing kind of in the wings, and we came off, and he was like, wow, that was amazing, and you're so great. And he's very generous with his praise. And he said, you know, I want to bring you to America. And we were like, gosh, this is kind of what we sort of were joking about. But we also said, we're not going to believe it until we're on a plane. And lo and behold, about 3 months later, we were on a plane to Texas.
That's fast.
So, it's just amazing. Like, well, Howard, once he says something's going to happen, he makes it happen.
Hurricane Howard.
Yeah, we got him on. I first got him on stage at the Perot Science Museum for an event with Ross Perot there. And, of course, he blew him away. They blew him away in the audience of Texas royalty there in Dallas. The funny bit was, you know, they had about three different sets, and then there were speakers in between. And every time they'd finish a set of music, Mr. Perot would get up and go up to him and go, now, y'all ladies, y'all going to play Irish Eyes before you quit, aren't you now? Oh, yes, Mr. Perot, we'll play Irish Eyes. And then they'd do another set, and he'd come up, now, you still haven't played Irish Eyes. You're going to play Irish Eyes for me, aren't you now?
Ross Perot, always the same, right, on the one-track mind.
Yeah, pretty focused. But, no, when I first met them at the National Concert Hall, you know, I was on singing three Irish songs that Uncle Bing had recorded with another piano player and another violinist that weren't nearly as good. But when we finished and I'm listening to these girls on stage, I'm thinking, wow, I'm sure glad I went before them because I wouldn't have wanted to follow them. And then they brought the headliner on afterwards. It was a lady who had participated and done well in Britain's Got Talent. And she wasn't nearly as good as Affinity. I mean, they were way, way better. So this is our fifth year that we've done a Christmas tour of the Northwest. And every time we go back to a location that we've been before, it's an immediate sellout. I mean, we're going back to Walla Walla for the fifth year. The tickets sold out 5 days after they went on sale back in October.
Excellent.
And it'll be our second year in Coeur d'Alene, and they sold out very quickly. But it's not as big a theater as the PAC, but it's a big theater, 400 seats. So I just have to tell your listeners out there, this is really special, not to be missed. Really, really special. They're never going to see a better show.
Oh, gosh, okay.
And, you know, I some years ago, because I've got some albums by the three Irish tenors, and went down to see him in the 7,000-seat Morrison Center in Boise. And, you know, they're fine. They sing beautifully, but they don't give you anything else. And the Affinity show is fun. I mean, they're going to get the audience laughing at different stages. which is always fun at a show, you know, when you have some humor. And I'll probably tell a couple of amusing stories that may get a chuckle or two out of the audience as well. So it'll be a fun night, no doubt about it.
Just remember, Howard, don't follow them, okay? Go on first.
Well, that's right, although I have to do a couple of duets with Emer, and that's very intimidating, I have to tell you.
Well, let her take the high harmony, and you'll be fine.
That's well, we usually joke about, you know, who's going to play the Phantom on the Phantom duet. Emer has to take the Phantom, but I always take it.
You know, Emer, Howard raised an interesting subject there. Where did the three of you learn your stage presence? How did you learn to be entertainers besides talented performers?
I think that's just something that happens when you perform a lot. You become more relaxed, and our attitude is always like people have you know, spent money to come here. They have left their warm, cozy houses to brave the elements and come and sit down and they want to be entertained. And for us, entertainment is not just about music. It's about getting people involved and making them feel like this is a special night, you know, where the music obviously is incredibly important, but we like to communicate, we like to engage, and we like to sort of vary the emotions, as we said before, throughout the evening as well. And I think that's just something that comes with, you know, performing a lot, and that's what we do. We perform all the time. We're not part-time, we're full-time at this. And the more you do it, the more you sort of start to feel relaxed, you know?
I like the fact that you're calling it a Celtic Christmas. I bet you have some songs that you and your family and your friends in your neighborhood sang every year that we don't know. Which ones are you going to introduce us to?
So obviously we'll have the typical songs. We're going to sing our version of Danny Boy. We're going to do, as I said, a few upbeat harp and violin jigs and reels. We'll have a Holy Night there, Silent Night. Some of the songs will be sung in Gaelic, not an awful lot, but in the Irish language. We've got a very fun version of Santa Baby that we always enjoy performing. It's a fusion of Santa Baby and some Marilyn Monroe classics. So that's our little nod to Hollywood.
There you go. That's good. You made your debut on the stage in America in 2014. How long had you been playing in European cities before you came over?
Oh, gosh. I mean, as I said, we got together about 10 years ago. So we've been performing all over since then, really. We dipped into different styles of music for a while. We did a little bit of, we would take like a pop or rock song and put a Celtic stamp on that. So if you want to visit our channel on YouTube, you'll find some versions of Adele songs and, what else have we done?
Elbow,
Titanium, that sort of thing. Always with a little bit of a Celtic stamp. So Evanescence is another one. But this show will be focused mostly on Celtic music. So we have Marble Halls, we have The Voice, which won the Eurovision about 20 years ago. We have River Dance is in the show as well. We tried to convince Howard to be the dancer in that, but he keeps turning us down.
I can't believe that, Howard. I can't believe you won't do the River Dance.
Yeah,
I know.
For obvious reasons. You know, it's interesting because they're, the impact of a show like this is really pretty impressive. You know, we were at the night before we did the show at the Bing Crosby Theater in Spokane on Sunday night. Saturday night was the annual Bing Crosby Film Festival that they have there. And what's stunning to me is that they finished the film festival, and I introduced Affinity on stage that night to help sell tickets for the next night. Anyway, they show White Christmas as the final showing, and here it is, 62 years after that film was released in 1954, and they literally almost fill a 750-seat theater to show that film on the big screen, and when it's over, the audience stands up and gives the film a standing ovation. It's just remarkable to me that, you know, when do you ever see a film audience give a movie a standing ovation?
Well, my wife would join them. It's one of her favorite. Did Bing love that film especially, or was there some other that was his favorite?
Well, he loved the film. He loved Holiday Inn, where he introduced the song with Fred Astaire back in 1942. And of course, there's a new biography that just came out about him from Gary Giddens that talks about all the things he did during the war years. And he told me one time that one of the hardest things he ever had to do in his career, when he was visiting the troops in France in November of 1944, and giving open air concerts to entertain the soldiers. One of the hardest things he had to do was to sing White Christmas when most of the GIs would be in tears while he was singing it.
Oh God, yeah, I can see that.
Knowing they were going to not be home for Christmas, you know, and envisioning what it was like back home. So, he was very much interested and committed to the legacy of that song. I actually met his producer on his last seven albums, Ken Barnes, over in England, and Ken was telling me a story. He said that he suggested to Bing on one of the albums that they go back and they re-record a lot of the songs that he had been big hits for him in the 30s and 40s, things like Pennies from Heaven and Just One More Chance and et cetera, and he made up a list of them. Bing said, that's a great idea, and he sat down with him to show him the list, and on that list were all these hit songs from the 30s and early 40s, and one of the songs that he'd written down was White Christmas, and Bing just crossed that one out. And, you know, the idea was there'd be better fidelity on some of the newer equipment that was available in the 70s than there was back in the 30s and 40s. And he said, why did you cross that one out? And Bing said, I think we got that one right the first time.
I've done that one. No need to do it again. Exactly.
Don't need to do that one again. That one will last. And it did, obviously. So
good story. Good Christmas story. Emer Barry, when it's time for you to do a new CD or make a video that's so important to your marketing, how much consideration do you give to that? What sort of extra work do you do when you're working in the studio?
Well, Chris, that's actually a really good question, because I don't think people necessarily know how much goes into the song picking and then deciding, you know, because sometimes you can pick a song and think it's going to be amazing and then record it and kind of go, it actually ends up being the song that you didn't think was quite as good, that records better. So when we did Oh Holy Night, I think we all had a special kind of connection to that, because it is a big thing in Ireland, like performing in church. So all of us have performed that in church at different kind of guises. So yeah, a lot goes into it. We have orchestra on that track, actually. So Mary is the musical arranger in our group, and she wrote an orchestral arrangement for that. We have choir on that as well. And yeah, there's a lot that goes into it. The styling is a great fun. When you come to the show, there will be a lot of costume changes. That's a big part of what we do as well. It's great fun. Of course, we are girls, so we do enjoy that. So yeah, there's a lot that goes into it.
How many costume changes? Just now that you raised this subject, I wonder how busy you're going to be.
Well, so, here's the subject. So when we open the show, it's going to be sort of more, we open the show with three Irish songs, basically. So we are dressed in green, white, and gold. I'm in the green, Mary and Teresa are in the white and the gold. Then I do a costume change. Oh, then we do a costume change for the Hollywood section. So we're in Hollywood Sparkle, which is great fun. So the lighting person in the Numerica pack is going to have their work cut out for them, because we'll be blind in the audience. And the second half then, we open the show with some more Irish music, and we're in red, and then I have another sparkly dress as the prize as well. So.
And do you have any stories of malfunctions that prevented you from getting back on stage in time, or not?
Oh yes, last year, I had Howard and Randy help me with, it was their one job. They had one job, which is zip up my red dress, because I can't do it myself, and they broke the zip.
Oh, trouble.
They broke the zip, and I had to go back on stage, and I had to switch back into the dress I had been in previously. So those things do happen. We do think it's very handy that there's three of us in the group, because getting those zips up by themselves, by yourself, is a real difficult. Sometimes you do need three people to get you in the dress.
Especially after all the American food we've been eating.
The dresses are already tighter.
Let's keep our girlish figures, shall we, while we're on tour. Well, how do you decide things among yourself as a group? Does it have to be three votes to get something done, or can two get it done?
I think we're very democratic in the group.
So two votes, that's a majority. That would make a decision on adding a new song or dropping one or something like that?
To be honest, we all really feel it whenever something really works.
That's what we call it an affinity.
Yeah, we say we have an affinity with something. So,
exactly.
That's part of the reason that we called ourselves Affinity.
When you first began, and I don't know how you were rehearsing, I guess, Emer, you and Mary were just, she was doing the violin and you were singing just in the very early stages of your musical relationship. When did you come to the conclusion that you should really get organized and do something professional?
Well, actually, myself and Mary, as I said, met at a competition where I was singing and Mary was the official piano accompanist. And it was great because, Mary's not supposed to be biased. We had just met at this. Mary's not supposed to be biased, but she kept on kind of like, you know, elbowing me, kind of going, I'm rooting for you. So I won that competition that time, and we decided we'd meet up again and see if we could do some gigs together. And then she announced that she was a violinist. I didn't know that until then. And then we decided to get a harp on board, and we thought that would be a really nice combination. And as far as I know, there's no other kind of professional group that is harp, violin and voice, just, you know, the three. I know Celtic Woman have a harpist and have a violinist, but it's not concert harp that they use. It's the smaller Irish harp.
Mm-hmm.
I think the audience will be really impressed when they see the size of the concert harp. It's 6 foot tall. It has 47 strings. It has gold on it.
Seven pedals.
So it as I said, it packs a real punch, you know. And Teresa is an expert at it.
Teresa, forgive me for asking, but why do you need 7 pedals? Tell me what they're all for. I don't recall that. I've seen 3, like on a piano, but 7, that's amazing.
The 7 pedals, it's one for each note of the scale. So we have C, D, E, F, G, A, B. So it means that we can compete with all the other instruments and change key.
Ah, so it's like modulating when you push a pedal.
That's right. It's like the black notes on the piano.
And do they color the strings differently so you know where to play? Is there some indicator on there? It looks like such a blind, I wouldn't be able to find a note on there. There's so many strings. But are colored.
They're color-coded, actually. So the red notes are C, the red strings. And then it depends, black or blue. You probably have blue here in America, so the strings are red and white and blue. But they can be blue or black, and they're the note F. But originally in Ireland, we had a different kind of a smaller harp, a folk harp, and it was mainly blind men who played the harp. So they didn't need, the strings were much closer together, and they were made from kind of wire wound or silver or gold. And these blind men played the harp with their nails. They were almost like talons. They were so long.
Yeah.
So it's very different. But over the years, I've managed to learn how to talk and play at the same time. So I don't really need to know where to place my fingers. You get used to it after a number of years.
Well, I'm sure you're a master at it. What about the breaking a string? Did you ever break a string?
Yes. Well, I suppose you always hope and pray it won't happen.
Yeah, I guess so.
Or if it's a lower or a higher string, you can kind of get away with it. But if it's in the middle and you need to play that note, it's most unfortunate, yeah.
And does the harp go out of, when one string breaks, does the harp go out of tune?
No, like I would always, one tunes it up before one starts playing, but it should be okay. It usually wouldn't affect if it's string, but it usually wouldn't affect the strings on either side of that. But you hope, anyway.
Thank you for that. I really, I'm sort of an instrumental freak. I just like to know what everybody's doing up there. Emer, Barry, Terrence O'Donnell, and Mary McCaig. It's really been, and also Howard Crosby. Forgive me, Howard. Almost left you off the bill there.
That's all right.
I thank you all for taking time on your trip to Wenatchee to pull over and give us a great interview. I appreciate your time and your artistry, and I wish you a sold out show tonight at the PAC.
Thanks for all your help, Michael. It's wonderful. And people would be crazy not to show up tonight. So
they're crazy not to show up. Did you hear that? So just get in your car, go down to the PAC, and get your tickets right now. Thank you all so much. Affinity tonight at the PAC with Howard Crosby. Thank you very much, ladies, and welcome to America. Have some fun. Merry Christmas.
Thank you, bye.
There they go. They're called Affinity. They'll be at the PAC tonight. We'll be back after this.
You're listening to The Agenda on News Radio 560 KPQ and KPQ.com.